And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, almost the weekend. Thursday, July the 13th, 2017. 13 minutes past 1 o'clock, 13 and a half minutes to be precise. You're tuned into the Now program. I am Scott Spears, and we are going to have a very interesting hour this hour. Last hour, we want to thank the Daily Beast's Eleanor Clift for joining us to talk about the world of politics. Of course, Eleanor, you might remember her as a panelist on the long-running television series, The McLaughlin Group. And I do want to remind you, coming up in the bottom of this hour at 1:45, we will be joined by our Congressman Jim Jordan to discuss healthcare. So that's something that right up there with President Trump is certainly on people's minds. But our first guest this hour is a multiple-time guest to this program. We're always happy when he joins these airwaves. He is a political scientist and author, and his book, Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, From Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama, is now available in paperback as of March the 1st of this year. You can get that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and publisher Roman and Littlefield. He is Dr. Ron Fineman. Dr. Fineman, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for inviting me again, Scott.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and certainly this week, because I was looking at some of your Facebook posts and writings, and you have predicted that President Trump will not make it through next spring, and you seem to feel that this week might have been the start of that. Am I correct?
Yes, I really do believe that this has accelerated the whole process a great deal.
Okay, well, again, for those who maybe don't have a grasp or who don't watch the news every day, in a tintype fashion, what happened starting last Friday in the New York Times?
Well, we learned from the New York Times, and of course earlier in other ways from the Washington Post and other newspapers, but specifically in this case from the Times, that Donald Trump Jr. had a meeting last June with a Russian government figure who was connected to Vladimir Putin indirectly, if not directly, and he brought along with him his brother-in-law, Jared Kushner, and at the time the campaign manager, Paul Manafort. And they've been changing their story, and so has the president ever since. And he just seems to be dismissing it now at his press conference in Paris as I speak. And it's definitely seen by many people as real collusion with Russia in trying to get so-called dirty information about Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Okay, now why is this collusion?
It's collusion because under our laws, we're not supposed to have anybody in American politics involved with foreign nationals in our political campaigns.
Okay. I asked Eleanor Clift this last hour. If Chris Christie, if Ted Cruz, if Marco Rubio, if Jeb Bush had won the nomination, would this Russian attorney have approached them with negative information on Hillary Clinton?
It's hard to say, I think possibly, but I would assume they would have rejected it.
Now, why would they reject it?
Because they know that it's illegal, or they should know that it's illegal under American law to do this, to have collusion. Of course, I can't be sure what they would do, but I do have a feeling that they would have rejected that kind of contact.
Now, it's my understanding President Trump has said he did not know this meeting even happened. So does that get him off the hook?
I would say no, because he's responsible for what his campaign manager is doing, or should be, and also what his son and son-in-law are doing. I think he's using the family connection to get around it, but this is not the kind of a proper behavior for family members or campaign managers to be engaged in.
Here's what I don't understand. Okay, by the time this happened, we knew it was going to be Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. Now, why did the Russians have this just severe hatred of Hillary Clinton? Was it a severe hatred of Clinton, or do they have something on Donald Trump, or is it a combination of both?
I would say it's both. They hated Hillary Clinton, Vladimir Putin, because she engaged in criticism of Putin's 2011 campaign, and he hated her ever since. Putin, he really despises the ground Hillary Clinton walks on, because she stood up for human rights at that point as Secretary of State. And as far as Trump, he makes it like he doesn't really know anybody in Russia, but he was at the 2013 Miss Universe contest. We now have a video of him with the people that Donald Trump Jr. was with. And so, I mean, he's lying all the time. We've never had a president lie so massively and so much. Richard Nixon, I think, in the afterlife is shaking and said, how does he get away with it?
How does he get away with this?
Apparently the Republican Party, at least most of it, except for people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, are unwilling to challenge him on it. They're too intense on their own plans to end Medicaid in the long term future, cut it dramatically, and also end Obamacare, and also do other things. And they are willing to sleep with the devil, is what I would say. And I think that's going to harm them long term.
Do you think that the Paul Ryans and Mitch McConnells, do you think they like Donald Trump?
I think Mitch McConnell has no problem with him, because you got to remember his wife is Secretary of Transportation, Elaine Chao. So there is a cabinet connection there. Paul Ryan, I think, has more of an issue with him, but I think he has sold his soul because he wants to accomplish his goal of ending Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. He has told us that in the past, and I think that's his goal long term. And he got all excited, apparently, in college about this, years ago, that he was going to work to undermine any welfare programs, as he calls them, and also the social safety net. And I think he's willing to work with him as long as needed to accomplish the goals, although they're not succeeding in it at this point, but to accomplish those goals.
What I don't understand is, I don't think anybody would say that President Trump or his family or the people working for him are not smart people. They have to be smart people. Why would they do this? What was the win for them? What was the gain? They have to know this was not legal. They can't be that naive.
Well, I think Donald Trump has never worried about legalities. He's always skirted on the idea of legalities. He is smart in the business world, but he is totally stupid when it comes to the political world. He has no idea, and he seems to act like he should be an authoritarian. That's why he admires Putin and admires the Philippine leader and admires the Egyptian leader and the Turkish leader. He admires authoritarian figures and would like to end freedom of the press. He's certainly attacking the press in a way that no other president has ever done to this extent.
You have said that you don't think President Trump will make it through the spring, and you said again at the start of this program that this is the start of that. How do you see it going now? And give me a prediction based upon what's going on now and how fast the news cycle is going about, is this still going to be next spring? What do you see happening? Just give me the timeline.
I would say that there'll be more revelations. They're not done. And the Mueller investigation is moving forward. The House and Senate intelligence committees are looking at it. And I think there'll be a lot more revelations. I mean, we keep on having new ones. And, of course, people around Trump will say it's fake news, but it's not fake news. It's real news. It's just that the people who follow Trump believe it's fake news because of people like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh claiming that. But I do think that the revelations are going to be pushing toward the idea of bringing pressure on Trump that he could face, or that people around him could face indictments, including his own family members. And I think he wants to protect his family. So as I see it now, I can foresee him being forced to resign at some point. I don't think impeachment is going to happen anytime soon, because the Republicans, have sold their soul to him. But I think there will be growing pressure on him to resign. And I think that the pressure will grow. And he's certainly not enjoying the presidency. He hasn't had a moment of peace on the job. And I think he's going to finally decide that as long as his family members are not going to be indicted, if he can make a deal of some kind, that he will resign.
We're in July. Do you see this happening before December 31st?
I would say no. I think it's going to happen, I think next spring sometime. I think the build-up will continue. And I think you got to remember that Donald Trump is overweight. He's not in the best of health in many ways, mentally or physically. And I think the stress is growing. And honestly, I would think anybody in his situation would say, what do I need this job for? I've already proved I'm the 45th president. It can't be taken away from me. And I do think that that's going to become his mindset over the next 7 to 8 months.
We're getting reports here from what's going on at Trump's press conference right now. And basically he has said most people would have taken a meeting with a Russian lawyer and that zero happened. That's his quote in the meeting with the Russian lawyer. Does that dismiss everything?
No, I think it's just a usual thing that he's always trying to create his own virtual reality. I do not think so. And I remind you, there was the case we reminded of, that in the year 2000, or maybe it was 1999, I think it was 2000 actually, that Al Gore's campaign manager, Tom Downey, former congressman from New York, got some information about George W. Bush's plans for the debate, and he opens it up and realized it and immediately called the FBI, and he resigned as the chair because he realized he could not work for Gore after that, but he handed it back. And that's the kind of thing that should have happened here. There should have been no possibility, but the email shows there was planning for this meeting and that Kushner and Manafort were told about it way before, much more detailed than Donald Trump is telling us.
So you think President Trump will resign because he will want to protect himself and his family from charges against collusion with the Russian government?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, here's the problem, and this is the interesting thing. What is the fallout from that? If you are deciding upon that is going to happen next spring, then what happens?
Well, Mike Pence would become president unless we find out that his denial of knowing anything about Flynn, which has now been contested, shows up that he might be involved in collusion. That's scary. I mean, that's really a terrible thought, but it could be that this goes further. There is that possibility already existing.
Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, was the head of the transition team, much like Richard Nixon, who resigned. Do you believe that Trump would leave before Pence? Do you believe that they would not try to pin this on Pence before Trump would say, hey, I've had enough?
Wow, I never thought of that Trump would try to... Well, actually, I don't think Trump has any ethics or morals in the sense. So I could imagine if he could have someone sacrificed, he basically mistreats his staff every day. He has no respect for them, and he actually contradicts what they say. I feel bad for Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conway and Sarah Huckabee Sanders because they're telling constant lies, apparently, or not being told what's going on, and then he contradicts them. So I think he will sacrifice anyone other than his own family, I think. But that's a new one to me about Mike Pence. I do not know, but there is that question of what Mike Pence knew about Flynn other than what he has said publicly. So there is a little contradiction and something to be wondering about at this point.
Well, it's just very interesting to me because how can somebody who was the head of the transition team, if we're going to have a president of the United States resign or be impeached for collusion with the Russian government, and Flynn has already had to be let go because of some Russian ties, how is it possible Mike Pence knew nothing when he was heading the transition team?
Well, that's what people are starting to say. I must also say that there's that connection about Paul Ryan being told by Kevin McCarthy about something about the Russians, and he joked and said, oh, let's not get into that. This was in June 2016. So I wonder if Paul Ryan has some connection to this. There is the possibility of that as well, based on what we're hearing about the House leadership and being told, shh, be quiet about that. So it seems like it's really a major conflict and a major crisis that could be way beyond what we even know now.
Well, here's the thing. I think people don't have much of a precedent here because we've only had one president resign, and of course that was Richard Nixon. And when Nixon resigned, people felt comfortable with Gerald Ford. They felt he was not there when Watergate had happened. Mm-hmm. They felt Nixon had won that last election handily over McGovern, which he had, 49 states.
Yes.
So, that did not seem like a big deal. Hillary.
And Gerald Ford was a blessing. I wish Gerald Ford could come back from the dead and be vice president right now. We'd be in much better shape.
Well, here's the problem that I foresee. If Trump does resign, which is your prediction, that would be the second time. Well, here's the difference. The problem is that Pence would have, even if he didn't do anything wrong, he's a part of the campaign that conspired with a foreign government that is hostile toward us to defeat the opposition party, and that opposition party's candidate got more votes than the president did. So
he also got more votes than 8 presidents of the United States in their majority win, yes.
So how do you just do the, okay, let's pass the baton to the vice president, let's pass the baton to the speaker, and just act like that didn't happen, and so sorry, Hillary Clinton, that foreign government put the boots to you, go off into retirement?
It's a mess. And actually, I've thought in my head that if it's shown that Pence and even possibly Ryan kept some information away that should have been known, that we might have to, hard to believe, go down to the president pro tempore of the Senate, who is third in line to be president, and that's Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah. There's no indication that Hatch has any background connection to any of this. But imagine, he's also 83 years old right now. Can you imagine the thought of Orrin Hatch as president?
Well, here's the thing, and I was talking to Eleanor Clift about this last hour, and let me kind of take you through that conversation.
Yeah, what you said, I didn't hear it.
Yeah. I'm going to take you through this conversation, because I said, it's interesting to me that Donald Trump is raising money for the next election, and the Democrats obviously want to beat him, but the only people I see speaking out against him big time, the only people I see writing books, the only people I see going to New Hampshire, the only people I see going out helping the 2018 Democrats try to win seats are Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And
Elizabeth Warren also.
Elizabeth Warren. But Elizabeth Warren, for some reason, doesn't get the press that Hillary and Bernie get.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same people as last time. So where are the 2020... I mean, I guess we can say they'll come, but... You know, these two people, Bernie Sanders, every time he's asked if he's going to run for president, he says, I don't know. He doesn't even, you know, he doesn't even do that. Oh, I don't think so. And Hillary Clinton, you would think Hillary Clinton, after everything she's done, she would just flat out say, no, that I'm not. But she doesn't. She says, I don't think so. She gives that John Kasich answer, and I would bet you a value meal at McDonald's that Kasich will be running.
I think that she or Bernie Sanders running would be a tragedy. I think we need new leadership, and I've written this on my blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. We need people in their 40s and 50s, a new generation, like we had with John F. Kennedy in 1960, Jimmy Carter in 1976, Bill Clinton in 1992, and Barack Obama in 2008. We need a new generation of leadership, and there are people that are showing up on the cable news networks and are being interviewed regularly. Amy Klobuchar, Senator from Minnesota, is one. Chris Murphy, Senator from Connecticut, is another. Also, Cory Booker of New Jersey is showing up. Also, Al Franken of Minnesota is showing up quite often, and a number of others. And I think people are not realizing it, but these are people that are showing up regularly to comment on many different cable shows, and I think they are all thinking about running, but in most cases, they have a race coming up in 2018, so they're not going to make it formal until they've won their race, and that includes Elizabeth Warren, and it includes Bernie Sanders, by the way, in that group, that they also face races, although those two will certainly, in fact, all of these people will probably win, but they want to wait until the Senate campaign is over. And there are some governors or future governors that could be considered, like Gavin Newsom, also Senator Kamala Harris of California, also Mayor Eric Garcetti of Los Angeles, who I think has real potential. So I think there's quite a market there, and we do need new faces, and preferably younger.
I think you're right. I think the Republican Party would say the same thing. But here's the problem, and this is what I see the problem. And this is why I believe Hillary Clinton's doing the book. This is why I believe she has not done a major network interview. She's done these things, seminars, but she has not done... an Anderson Cooper or a Diane Sawyer. She has not done with any of the evening news people. And here's what I believe. I believe that Hillary Clinton is waiting to see if Donald Trump is impeached or resigns. Because the story is, if he's impeached or resigns, the story is foreign government colludes with Trump to beat Hillary Clinton. And you can't just say, sorry, Hillary. You know, that was your chance. You actually did win. But too bad. Go to retirement just because you're not young anymore. I don't think you can do it.
Well, you can't do it. She can run, but I don't think she would unite the Democratic Party. I think she would probably lose the next time if she was the candidate. And, of course, who the Republicans could run would, if Pence became president or somehow Ryan, I don't think they would be able to win in 2020. I think there'd be challenges from within the Republican Party, including John Kasich, for one, but also others. But I think John Kasich is the best bet the Republican Party has right now for the future, because I think he's a decent conservative, a man who's principled and has done a great job as Ohio governor and earlier in the House of Representatives as head of the Budget Committee. And I think he's a solid figure that could really somehow revive the party fortunes.
Right, and I think John Kasich probably will run. I mean, it looks that way to me, even though he says I don't think so. But
again, he's not out of office yet. It's still too early.
Right, but he, like I said, the issue to me is it's never happened in American history. I don't think somebody who possibly won the election is just going to be satisfied to say, well, yeah, now we have found out that they did collude against you and that you probably did lose because of that. And it's just too bad. If you were in your 40s, maybe, but sorry, you're 70 now, so you can't do it. I just don't think that, because I do believe the problem is there's no groundswell for Hillary Clinton right now. But I believe if people thought that the election was stripped from her, I think there would be a groundswell. And I also think that if the Democrats got back the House in November of 18, they would take office in January of 19. It might not be the speaker that you would have Nancy Pelosi. It all depends on when this all happens. And Nancy Pelosi is a supporter of Hillary Clinton.
And she could even end up in the White House, as you said a few weeks ago. It stunned me when you said that, but it's true. If it dragged out and an impeachment came in 2019, and the vice president was somehow involved in a way that made him not eligible, it could be Nancy Pelosi becomes the first woman president.
Right, and I just don't think. Can you imagine? Do you remember the night after the elections, the gatherings? I don't want to call them riots, but the protests we had the day after the inauguration. Do you think if we actually had proof on all these news channels that Hillary Clinton really did get it stuck to her, that there would not be people in the streets?
Actually, you're right. I think it is possible. I mean, anything is possible. And the point is, one thing I've thought of as we're talking here is that if she was to run again, you could say all the, quote, dirty stuff about her has come out. What else could come out that has not been revealed already? And yet she still won the popular vote. So she probably would have less trouble. There'd be less news to come out that would not be already known about her past.
Well, and let me just lay this out there.
Yeah.
She's written the book. By that point, she will have written the book on why she lost. She learned from her mistakes. She could take one of these Gillibrand, Al Franken, Booker, one of these young people as her vice president, say she's only going to run for one term because she realized she got robbed the last time, and 2020 will be the 100-year anniversary of women getting the right to vote in a presidential election.
The 19th Amendment, yes, it would be inspirational to have a woman in the White House, you're right.
And what about the woman who was robbed if Donald Trump is impeached or resigns?
You make an interesting case for it, I must say. That's what makes politics and discussion about campaigns so exciting, because there's so many different ways of looking at it.
And I am not Hillary Clinton's press agent. All I'm saying is, something about her is peculiar since the election, because you're right. Common wisdom would say she's lost twice. She's not going to do it. But people forget she was a First Lady of the United States. People forget she was Secretary of State.
She's the U.S.
Senator. She's the only one. Jimmy and Rosalynn Carter, Barack and Michelle Obama, even her husband Bill Clinton. She is the only one out there, front and center, former First Lady, former President, taking shots at Donald Trump continuously, writing a book. And why, if she wasn't going to run again, she's 70 years old this year. She has done all those things. She lost the last election. When Christine Amanpour says, "Will you ever run for office again?" Why didn't you? No. What does she have to lose by doing a network interview at this point? She's playing it very cagey, and that is, I don't understand that.
Well, I think because she might feel that a lot of people feel they've had enough of her for the time being. So that's why she's trying to avoid too much publicity. But her daughter's getting involved in Twitter wars with Donald Trump, and I give her credit for it, I must say. She's certainly speaking up herself. She's not staying quiet. I will say that Hillary Clinton, I've always felt, was extremely qualified, very competent, very experienced. We have not really had a president quite like her, I don't think, ever in our history. And I really have to win, and 93% said in some polls and all that, and some some groups that that figure that kind of stuff out. And it's just stunning that she did lose. So I have to say that her qualifications are still there, her faults and shortcomings are there, but she did win the last time, so you've got a good point there. It could be that she could really be a miracle person who comes back and wins the White House.
Well, let me just ask you this, Dr. Feinman, because your theory, and I'm basing this on your theory, that Donald Trump will not be there less than a year from now. Okay, Donald Trump is gone, and he's gone basically on the basis, whether he resigns or is impeached, on the collusion of Russian government to defeat Hillary Clinton. Even the story,
obstruction of justice, with Comey also.
Right. Well, also, I mean, this week, Hillary Clinton was the story. Hey, I've got some bad information on Hillary. Come meet with me. So, okay, that's the story. Trump is gone, as you say will happen. Okay, that happens. You think, what? Okay, because you know Hillary's going to speak at that point. Trump resigns, she's going to speak to somebody. She's just not going to hide under a blanket. So in that speech, what does Hillary Clinton say? If she's not going to run, if she's just all done. What does she say in that speech? What's the answer?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it, and maybe I'd volunteer to be a speechwriter. I think that if he left office, her possibility of running would be greatly increased, yes.
Yeah, I find her fascinating because I never thought we would see her after that election the way we have seen her. She attended the inauguration, which she really didn't have to do. Nobody would have blamed her if she didn't.
That's correct.
She's doing all the right things. And I don't know why somebody who would not be running for office would be doing that. What does she care? If she's not running for office, what does she care at this point, what people think of her?
Well, she has always had a public commitment, to children and to women and to public good. And I think that's always been her life story. And people say it's bull. I don't think so. I think she's always been very committed. And I really don't understand, even for people who didn't vote for her, why they hate her. I just don't get it. Because it's one thing if you don't like what she stands for, but it seems to me she is a committed woman and someone who should be admired, for sure.
Well, I guess it's going to be interesting because it's never happened before, and when something never happens before, that makes it awful peculiar. And if Pence does get taken out, I would not want to be Paul Ryan, because do you think people would accept him as president?
Well, again, there might be something suspect about him, about knowing about the Russian background from that Kevin McCarthy comment last year that has been mentioned, so I don't know. It would be hard, but look, he ran for vice president with Mitt Romney, so he was a heartbeat away then. Of course, I wrote against him and said I thought he was a terrible choice, and I think he would be a terrible choice. In many ways, maybe worse than Mike Pence, if you think of his whole public record. But I think, he could be, but it could also go, as I've said, in theory, down to the Senate President pro tempore, Orrin Hatch of Utah, which is pretty crazy, but it could go that far if there's shown to be a Russian collusion and it could be found out in time before either of them, Pence or Ryan, make it to the White House.
That being said, you have made the prediction on President Trump. What is your prediction? Who do you think, when President Trump goes, in your prediction, in the spring of 2018, who becomes president?
Most likely Mike Pence, I would guess. Yes, I would have to say that, unless there's enough evidence or investigation that stops him. But, of course, once he comes in, there could be a beginning of an investigation of him if there is evidence that shows up, and he could have a crisis time in the White House.
Would the country accept Mike Pence?
Well, it's constitutionally the case that he's the vice president, so it's always been that way since John Tyler, although he had problems with Congress originally. In 1841, he said, "I am president in every sense of the word," after William Henry Harrison died, and there was trouble about it, but he stayed the whole term in office. So unless there's something that can be brought up against Vice President Pence before or when he is president, he will be he will stay in office, and he will be the 46th president.
Whoever would come to office when President Trump goes, early and unexpectedly, Pence, Ryan, Orrin Hatch, whoever it is, can they really win in 2020 with all that baggage?
I think not. It's just like Gerald Ford. I do not think Pence or Ryan, and certainly not Hatch. I think the Democrats are very likely to win in 2020, and I think they are going to gain the House. Probably not gain the Senate, because they need to gain 3 seats and they have to protect 25. It's going to be hard. But I think they are going to win the House, and I think that the mood of the country will be, because of the health care issue, will be toward the Democrats by 2020. Who's going to be the nominee? It's not going to be just one or two. It's going to be a large list. Older people, younger people. It's going to be a fascinating time to be commenting on.
It certainly will. And what happens to Donald Trump when he leaves office?
Well, he goes back to his properties and probably still speaks out and claims he's been wronged. And he'll have his followers, his 35% or so, or maybe less by that time. I think he will always be a problem, because he will always stir up a hornet's nest. But he's not going to keep quiet, no. And he'll claim he's wronged.
Yeah, well, it's always a pleasure to talk with Dr. Ron Feinman, author of Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama, available in paperback as of March of this year. Check it out on Amazon. Dr. Feinman, always an interesting conversation.
Yes, we had a great time. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Dr. Ron Feinman, always interesting. We're going to take a quick break and come back to our representative, Jim Jordan, momentarily. So don't you dare go anywhere.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the voices you want to hear. Marianne Michaels reading a poem by Nan Britton, the mother of the daughter of President Orrin G. Harding.
And it's called Her Eyes by Nan Britton. Sometimes her eyes are blue as deep sea blue, and calm as water stilted at evenfall. I see not quite my child in these blue eyes, but him whose soul shines wondrously through her. Serene and unafraid he was, and knew how to dispel the fears in other hearts. Meeting an anxious gaze, all tranquility, these are her father's eyes. Sometimes her eyes are blue, the azure blue of an October sky on mountaintops. I do not see my child in these blue eyes. They are the eyes of him whose spirit glowed with happiness of soul alone, which lies far deeper than the depths of bluest eyes, whose smile a thing of joy it was to see. These eyes, this smile, are his. Sometimes her eyes are of a tired gray blue, filled with the sadness of an age-old world. And then again, my child's not in these eyes. These are the eyes of one assailed, whom disappointment crushed with its grate. Around his head a halo memory casts, reflecting that refiner's fire which purged him clean and made him what he was. Sometimes, in child amaze and wonder blue, her baby eyes are lifted up to mine. These only are the eyes she brought with her, and so I fold her close within my arms and talk of dolls and stars and mother love, for well I know that pitifully soon she will be grown, and then her eyes will hold only the deeper lights his own eyes knew.
You ought to get a job reading books, Marianne. That was very good.
That was great.
Yeah. Thank you.
That is the introduction to the President's Daughter.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the voices you want to hear. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
Scott Spears back with you here, 37 minutes past the hour on this Thursday, July the 13th, 2017, and certainly something that has been on our minds as of late is healthcare. And we're looking here as the news sites are breaking it right now. The headline, New Health Bill Allows Cheaper Plans with Fewer Benefits. And Ted Cruz has just said, and this is a quote, the new health care bill is not a total repeal. Let's talk to a man who voted for the health care that went into the Senate, our own Representative Jim Jordan. Representative Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Good to be with you.
What do you think of what's happened in the Senate since the bill that you voted for left Congress?
Well, there's some improvements, and there's some things that aren't so good. But we're pleased that the Senator Cruz amendment is in the legislation. We haven't seen it because we know that amendment's been changed some from what he was initially proposing. So we want to see the language. But the idea of giving consumers real choices, creating a real marketplace, and allowing them to select the kind of plans that they want that are actually going to be plans with lower premiums, we think that makes a lot of sense. And so hopefully that amendment's written in the right way, and it's good and stays in the legislation, but we want to see it. It just was rolled out just a few hours ago.
Do you think that the bill will pass in the Senate?
Who knows? It's too early to tell. What I do know is that we told the American people we were going to repeal Obamacare. This bill does not do it. The bill to pass the House, unfortunately, did not accomplish that goal in entirety either, but it was a good step in the right direction. We had introduced the clean repeal, the same thing we passed a year and a half ago that we put on then-President Obama's desk, and that's what we wanted to send to President Trump, but our leadership made a different decision, a different calculation, and put together a different piece of legislation. So we fought long and hard in the House to make that bill better. It was a better piece of legislation when it left the House than when it was first introduced because of the involvement from conservatives. But unfortunately, I'm always honest with the voters, it wasn't a full repeal, but a good step in the right direction. Now, hopefully, the Senate will send us something back that's pretty good as well that we could then move on to move to President Trump's desk. But we'll wait and see.
Would you vote for something that was not a total repeal, as Senator Cruz says?
We already have. Look, we initially opposed. I mean, the listeners may remember the intense debate that took place in the House and how a number of us conservatives were opposed to the version that first came out. We know because of that intense debate, we made it better, but like I've said, it wasn't a full and complete repeal. Now, it did a lot of good things. Got rid of the mandate, got rid of all the taxes, and gave this option for states to get out from under some of those regulations that we know are driving up costs. So it was some good things in the bill that passed the House. Some of those things have stayed in the Senate. Unfortunately, some haven't. Like they're reimposing some of the tax increases that we removed in our bill. But we'll have to take a look at the Senator Cruz amendment and see what exactly that does. But I think it's a good sign that at least some version of it is in the bill. So we'll just have to wait and see.
A lot of Republicans, including President Trump, campaigned heavily on full repeal, replace of Obamacare. That, it looks like it's not going to happen. With a House and a Senate and a President that are all Republican, why couldn't that promise be kept?
Great, great question. And it's the position that we push for. I personally introduced the clean repeal legislation back in February. As I said, the same thing we had voted on last Congress, because we wanted to do it in two bills, a repeal bill, repeal it all, have a wind-down period of 2 years, so everything stays in place for 2 years, and that gives you time to do then the replacement. Instead, our leadership made the decision that they were going to unveil a piece of legislation and work on a piece of legislation that combined elements of both. I think that was, in hindsight, I think that was a mistake. We thought at the time it was a mistake, but we do need to get something done and move in the right direction because premiums are just continuing to rise, particularly for people in the individual and small group market.
Were the Republicans unprepared for Donald Trump becoming president? Did they think that Hillary was going to win, she would veto anything that was passed, and it didn't really matter? Because it seemed like when it came time...
I mean, that was not my position. That may have been some, but I don't think so. I actually felt like as a year ago, about this time, you could start to sense that Donald Trump had a real chance. I thought he had a real good chance in Ohio, based on what I was seeing across our state and across our district last summer. I thought he had a real good chance of winning, and obviously he did. So it certainly wasn't my position. But I always say this. I think we make this job too complicated. Our job is pretty basic, pretty simple. Do what you told the voters you were going to do. And that's what we should have. That's why we introduced the clean repeal, because that's what we told the voters we were going to do. But when it all shook out that we were in front of us here in the House was the legislation that had some repeal elements, some replace, and that was the bill. You make an up or down decision on that, and you ask, is this the best thing we can get out of the House at the time? And back in May, I thought it was, and so we supported it. But our job is to just focus on what we told the voters we're going to do. We said we're going to get rid of Obamacare. We're doing that to the best we can. We said we'd reform the tax code and lower the tax burden on families. We said we'd build the border security wall. We need to get about doing all those things.
But so many of them have not been done. When you go out to campaign, what do you tell people?
That's why we've called. We did a press conference yesterday, Scott. That's why we called to stay here in August, because we think there are important issues that haven't been addressed and need to be addressed that we told the voters we're going to do, that they sent us here to do, and we should be here working on those and actually accomplishing some things. Getting some results before there's any recess seems to be the right approach, and that's what we called for 6 weeks ago as the House Freedom Caucus, and we did a press conference yesterday emphasizing that very thing.
Our own governor here in Ohio, Governor Kasich, doesn't like this health care bill. Why do you think he doesn't like it? Republican governor.
Well, he's been one of those governors who's advocated the Medicaid expansion. But I would say even our own General Assembly disagrees with the governor on the Medicaid expansion, as evidenced by the vote they took on the state budget just a few weeks ago. So just a different position. What I come back to is, what did we tell the voters? We had an election in 2010, 2014, 2016, where health care and repeal of Obamacare was a central element, central issue in those campaigns. Let's get about doing what we said. And that's what we're trying to do here in Washington. We didn't go campaign and say, we think we should expand the Medicaid, build on the Medicaid expansion population. We should increase the Medicaid expansion that was part of Obamacare. We didn't campaign on that. So I just have a fundamental difference, because that's not what I told the voters in the 4th District that I was going to do if they gave me the privilege to serve them and their families in Congress.
You know, Representative Jordan, a question that comes up a lot is, special interests control Washington lobbyists. The pharmaceutical company is a big group. Does the pharmaceutical company contribute a lot to campaigns that you know of, or your campaign in particular?
I think there's way too much influence from the bigs who like big companies, big labor, big interests. I think have way too much influence, and a lot of times this is whole cronyism culture here, where the big companies can come in and get certain things done in a way that benefit them and maybe hurt the middle class and small and mid-sized businesses from actually competing in a free market. What I'm about is free market. Let's make sure the playing field is fair. Everyone knows the rules. It's equal treatment under the law, and then you go compete. And unfortunately, what we've seen is way too much partiality and special deals. Even frankly, Scott, what we saw in the Justice Department under the Obama administration, where we saw unequal treatment under the law, as evidenced by the treatment Secretary Clinton was given when the investigation and the decisions made by the Justice Department. Have you ever seen a time where the former president gets to meet with the Attorney General just 3 days before the subject of the investigation is interviewed by the FBI? That is not the kind of treatment normal Americans are going to get, but somehow it was okay for Secretary Clinton to get treated that way. And a host of other situations in that investigation that display that. So we should be about equal treatment. We should be about free markets, not about special deals just because you're someone who's important or had some title and some held some high office, or because you're some big company.
I think transparency is important, and I think you're right. And I think that's why people wonder, and forgive me for asking, but did you accept money from pharmaceutical companies?
I raised money from all kinds of folks. We have folks all across the district who've supported our campaign efforts because they believe what we do. We've had political action committees who support our campaign, because I think people who support our campaign understand that I'm going to come fight for the very things I talk about. So we have a broad base of support, which is what you have to do if you're going to be able to tell the people across your district what you're about and why you want to go serve them and their family.
The Hillary Clinton instance you just referenced, the thought was by a lot of people that a favor was asked, a deal was struck. We don't know, but that's what a lot of people think. Has anybody ever come to you and said, do this and I'll give you this?
No, and if they did, I wouldn't accept. But what we do know about recently came to light, Scott, was the fact that James Comey put confidential information in these memos he produced. Maybe that would explain why he thought it was that he made the decision not to prosecute Secretary Clinton, because that looks like he was doing the same thing. What we do know is James Comey told us under oath just a few weeks ago that he misled the American people when the Attorney General then, Loretta Lynch, the then Attorney General, told him to portray the Clinton investigation as a matter, not an investigation, to call it a matter, not an investigation. So think about that. The Attorney General tells the FBI Director, go tell the American public something that's not accurate. And he did it. So I think that's why we've called for investigations into that issue as well. And not just me. Democrat Senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, said we should investigate that issue as well.
Do you think Donald Trump, as well as Senator Clinton, or former Secretary Clinton, or Attorney General, do you think President Trump has ever misled the American people?
I think there's an investigation going on now. We know what the recent story surrounding Donald Trump Jr. There's an investigation unfolding now, and that will continue to happen. We need to get to all the facts and all the truth. No one's ever accused me of going easy on my own party, but I think we need to keep all this in context. I think as just and look at the same issues I just talked about. The idea that James Comey leaks a document, a government document, through a friend of the New York Times for the stated objective of creating momentum for a special counsel, and not just any special counsel, but his good friend, his mentor, his predecessor, Bob Mueller. I think we should investigate that as well. So I just say let's keep all this in context.
It's all interesting. And the final question is that why does President Trump sometimes do contradictory things? Is that hard to answer for? Is that hard to deal with in these town halls and things that go on?
Excuse me, Scott, I didn't hear it. Say it again.
I said President Trump sometimes says things that later we find out not to be exactly accurate. And he is your own party. If you were a Democrat, I would ask the same question about Hillary Clinton. But is that hard to deal with? Is that hard to explain?
Well, look, I'll leave that for folks in the White House to talk about, and you know, your perception of that he may have said things that you think aren't exactly the way they should have been stated. What I do know is he was elected, and we were elected to accomplish certain things for the American people. We should be focused on that. There are investigations ongoing that are going to get to the facts, but in the course of those investigations, I think, as I've said, it's important to keep everything in context and evaluate all of it.
Well, I guess
the Lynch, the Clinton matters, and everything else. So
that's
to me, I think, is important, and that's what I'm trying to focus on.
Well, let me just ask you this in parting, and just, you know, do you think President Trump has ever misstated anything? Don't let me say that he has. Do you believe he ever has not told the truth?
I mean, you have to give me an example here. Just like a broad statement. Do I think you may have misstated something? My kids have ever missed. Look, everyone misstates things from time to time. So I'd have to have a statement that you're talking about.
Let me give you an
what
example.
What I know
real quick.
Is there's an investigation ongoing relative to the Russian meddling in our election. I think that's important. But I think in the course of that, we should keep the broad context in focus, because I think that's what the American people elected us to do and want us to do.
Aside from Russia, I'll give you the example. We're going to build a wall. Mexico's going to pay for it.
I think Mr. President Trump is committed to building a wall, and so am I.
Is Mexico going to pay for it?
Are you saying in a direct way, or because of some kind of assessment that would be made on people coming across the border as far as coming here legally? I don't know what he was referring to, but his commitment to building a wall, I think, is real, and I share that commitment. I think it's something we told the people we were going to accomplish, and we should get about doing that.
Okay. Well, hey, Representative Jordan, I always thank you for your moments. They are always very interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Representative Jim Jordan, and that's all the time we have today. Okay, folks, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Stay tuned for much more programming on WWGH Radio.
But I would say I should have spent more time with my family Although now my son Mark is a documentary film producer in California. My daughter Carrie was on a show with me back in the early, about 10 years ago. But she has a couple of children. But, oh, I think probably I could have spent some more time. I was trapped. But also the thing is that I didn't